And number six is the one that knows it anyway, so. Seven?
There's no one out in the hall.
And traditionally, this is a low-impact day. Okay, we're going to open a project or solution. And the one I'm looking for is inside the folder called NextVB. And it's the one that says if test. So look for that. Now notice as we're doing this that these, when you look at VB and you click on these, it's a whole load of folders in there. So there's just a whole load of folders and you finally get to the one you want and you click on it. That means that when you send me the VB, I need that whole folder. So you need to zip up the folder and send me the zip folder.
Okay.
Yeah. I was getting ready and one of the folders became like 20-something megabytes for no reason. So
no, right.
20 sites.
They put an incredible amount of stuff in the background.
I deleted everything, then I started to zip.
Well, yeah, but...
it worked, I checked.
Okay.
Yeah, it was some prep, I mean...
I would not recommend deleting. I'd recommend just zipping it up and sending it. So every folder, you just want to go in and get the name of the folder and say you want to zip it up. And then just send me the zip file. So for the assignment that I gave you, you're going to send me 5 zip files. One for each problem. Okay, so you grab the folder, zip it up, right click on it or whatever, and zip it up, and then just send me the zip version. Okay, because I need to see everything. Okay, so I'm opening, actually, I think I'm opening the wrong one. I want the if test. Okay, so this program looks like this. Okay, so I'm taking in a lot of data on the side. So let's say that I enter it in, and I want to have the branch is Boston, the department is 1-2, the budget is 6,000, I have spent 34,000, or 3,400, I've committed 1,200, and so that's the information that I've entered in, just randomly me getting out this information. So I work at the Boston branch, I'm in Department 12, my budget is 6,000, I've spent 3,400, I've committed for something that I want to do for 1,200, and so that's my information that I have. Okay, for you guys that just came in, I'm inside the next folder in VB, and I picked the if one, which is inside the next folder. So, now if I have 4 different things going on here, 4 different procedures, this is global definition. Okay, work diff is defined right under class, it's global, which means that any of the procedures can see it. These are local, which means it is local to the routine. Only that routine, the button calc routine, can see those work areas, because they're only defined here. Now, in Visual Basic, when I define a work area, I give it a type, and I can also give it an initial value. So as integer equals 0 tells it it's an integer, and it is 0 as a starter. Down here, I skipped the as integer just to show you that I could, and it was fine. Okay, but it's preferred that you give it a type. So I'm going to now hit that first button, which is private sub button calculate click. So I'm going to hit that one. And if you don't know which one it is, you can go out and click on the button, not in run mode, but in work mode. Click on the button and it will bring the cursor over to whichever procedure it is. So you can figure out which procedure it is. So I'm going to hit calculate and it's coming up and telling me 1400. Okay? So what it did is it said work diff, which I define globally, equals what's in the budget minus the sum of spent and committed. So the sum of spent and committed is 48 from 6,000 is 14,000. It's 46 instead of 48. 46, and so 14,000 is what I have left. So I did the calculation, put it in a work area, and then assigned it to a text box. Okay? I could have put it directly into the text box, but then I wouldn't have gotten to show you about variables. Okay? So I just did the calculation, put it into a work area, and then put the work area onto the form in a text box. Now the next one down, I basically beat it to death. Okay? I did every little step. I took the information on the form and put it in work areas. Then I added up spent and committed and put it in from budget. Then I put the from budget out on the form. Then I took the budget and subtracted the from budget from it and put it out on the form. So I kind of beat it to death, basically. I didn't really need to do all of this work. So if I hit the calculate, it shows me the 4,600, which is the things that I have spent and committed, and it shows me the 1,400, which is what I've got left. Okay? So those are the two things that it's showing me there. Now on the next one, on this one, I've defined work total as a zero, and I have defined it in both procedures here. I've defined work total as a zero here, and defined it again down here, because those are local definitions. If I wanted to, I could have put that up as a global definition, and then I wouldn't have to define it in both procedures, because it would just be global. Okay? So now I've got a calculation that I am adding the spent and the committed to get me work total. And then what I'm going to do, the logic that I'm doing on this, is I'm starting out and saying, okay, is the branch Boston? And if the answer is yes, the branch is Boston, then I'm asking, is the budget greater than $5,000? And if the answer is yes, then they meet the criteria. So they meet the criteria. Okay? If the answer to the budget question is no, I take the else. I take this else right beneath the question, and I ask another question. And the other question is the total greater than the budget divided by 2. Okay, so there's a couple of things here. I'm allowed to put a calculation in my if statement and say, if what's in budget is greater than, do this calculation. Now that calculation isn't stored anywhere. It's just a temporary thing that is done in order to answer the if statement. But it will be able to answer the if statement of it. Okay, so if that's true, I am also saying that it meets the criteria. If it isn't true, I've run out of chances, and the next thing says, does not meet. So the no to that question is it doesn't meet, then I connect and I have the end if. And notice how nicely it does this. Here's the if, there's the else, there's the end if. They're all nicely embedded so that I can easily tell that this if goes with that else and so forth. Okay. So there's one end if. Now my next end if is going to be joining the yes and the no on the salary budget question. So there's my next end if. Okay. And then there's an else, and that else ties back to Boston. And if it's no, it does not meet. And I bring this down and connect this across. Okay. So that's my flowchart. Now this flowchart falls in that pattern of one thing has to be true in either of two others. Okay? It has to be Boston in either of the next two things. And I guarantee you your money back that there'll be questions about this on the final. Okay? Because this seems to be the thing that people have problems with. The one thing has to be true in either of two others. Okay? So, in the button and either, I am going to ask this question. Okay, so this is what I looked at when I just did the flowchart with all the separate ifs, and I'm going to answer that question. Okay, so if I run this, I guess I was in run mode. Yes, I was. So if I run this and I put in Boston, Department 12, budget 6,000, spent 3,400, committed 1,200, and if I click on this first button, it comes back and tells me it meets the criteria. And you can see that it meets the criteria because it's Boston and the budget is greater than 5,000, so it meets the criteria. Okay? So it meets the criteria and is showing. Okay, now I look at this and I see that the yeses to either of these questions are doing the same thing. So the yeses to these two questions are doing the same. And then I look over here and I see that the no's are the same. That's not what I meant to write. The no's are the same. And so that means basically that I can do a compound because the yeses are the same and the no's are the same. So that means I can do a compound. So here down in this last one is the compound. I added the two things to get my total, and then I said, okay, if branch equals Boston and parenthesis, which stands for either in this case, and either the budget is greater than 5,000 or work total is greater than the budget divided by 2, put out the criteria. I don't care which of these is true. Put out the criteria. Else, if they're not true, put out not the criteria. Okay? So those do not meet the criteria. Questions? Okay. What about if I took the parenthesis out? What happens when I take the parenthesis out? Okay, some brave soul. What happens when I, yeah?
The work for Boston and budget over 5,000 or only work total greater than that budget?
Yep. It will ends get resolved before ors. So we'll group those first two things and say these two have to be true or this stands alone. Because the ands get resolved before ors. And when you don't want that to happen, you can use the parenthesis to change it. Because the parenthesis gets resolved before the ands and ors get resolved. Okay. Now, if I don't put in the department, for example, if when I was filling out this form, I didn't put in the department, it wouldn't care because the department is not used. If I didn't put in Boston, it wouldn't care because the only Boston check is asking, is text branch equal to Boston? And if it's not equal to Boston, then it's equal to spaces, and so it gets a no. Okay. However, if I don't put in something like spent or something like budget, where I'm doing a calculation, then it's going to crash. I have to put something in on numerics because if I'm asking it to do a calculation and I'm not giving it the information, then it's going to crash. Okay? So, if you don't know whether it's going to crash or not, you either have to look at the code or fill everything in. If you fill everything in, then hopefully it's not going to crash. Okay? And both of these hit meets criteria because they're both looking for Boston and a budget greater than 5,000. Questions? Okay, the next one I want to look at is the array one. Come on, Mouse. So I'm going to do a file, close solution. The sun is a wonderful thing. Okay, so I'm going to say open a project or solution, and I'm going to go into my collection that are already unzipped, and I'm going to click on Department Array. Okay, if you haven't unzipped it, you've got to go to my site and unzip Department Array. And then I am going to run the one that has the 10 in it or the SLN extension. So this is how I set up an array. And actually, that's not how I set up an array. This should have been different. I made a change in the last class. One is girls. Somebody tell me.
Two is boys.
Two is boys.
Three is infant.
Infant.
Four is toys. Five is books.
I did not mean to save that. And down here I said if it's greater than zero and I think that's it. Okay, so I've got here, and I can't spell. Have I mentioned that I flunked fifth grade spelling? There. Department name. I did spell that right, right? But I didn't put the closed parenthesis on. Okay, debugging lessons. should have let me put that on, even if it was a mistake, but it didn't. Okay, so this is an array that I've set up. Now hopefully it looks like yours. We got it back, hopefully. This has definition of the array, and the array is called department name. Now, I am setting this up so that I am having five different versions of department name. So the first one is department name with a zero after, one after it. There is a zero available if I want it, but I didn't use the zero. Department name with a one after it is girls. Department name with a two after it is boys, and so forth. Now what this does is putting the one or the two there makes it unique. Okay, you can't have the same data name twice. You can't name the same field when you're programming twice. So I can't call something HRS and then call something HRS, something else HRS, because then it gets confused. Which one are you talking about? Well, here I am calling them both department name, but I'm putting an index on them. And this is an index or a pointer or a subscript. Index and subscript probably being more popular. So I now made them unique because I'm saying department name with an index of one is girls. Department name with an index of two is boys. So they are unique. If I take out the index, then they're not unique because they just say department name. So if I take out the index, they're not unique. So when I set up an array, I'm saying I'm going to use this department name multiple times, but I'm going to throw a number in there to tell you which one I'm talking about. Okay? So, the number up here is the last number that I use there. When I first learned to do this, the number up there used to represent how many were in the array, and since department name zero could be considered in it, it might have been six, and it won't hurt anything if you put up six. But there is no sixth thing, so you have to be sure not to try to use it. So down here, when I want to get the name, that's the first thing I check. Is the text department number greater than zero? Okay, that rules out zero and it rules out negative numbers. And is text department number less than six, which means it can only go up to five. If I use six, it will crash, because there is no department name modified by six. Okay? So I'm checking to see that the department number is in range. And if it is, then I say, go get the department name that department number is pointing to. So if it's a two, it's going to get boys. If it's a four, it's going to get toys. So it gets the name that number is pointing to. Okay, so if I run this, okay, and I put in a department number of one, it's going to go and get girls. Okay? So it's gone and got girls. If I put in a department number of four, it's going to go and get toys. Okay? The alternative to this, to using an array, is a bunch of if statements. The first program that I ever wrote, I had to convert a numeric month to the word month. And I wrote it with an if statement. If month number equals 1, January. If month number equals 2, February. And I went through and wrote it. And when I proudly handed it in, my boss said, you know, this would have worked a lot better if you'd used an array. And he then taught me how to use an array. And so I set up my array with 1 through 12 and the department names. And it was easier. Okay. But not that the way I did it was wrong, it was just wrong. He felt the better way of doing it. Okay. So this gets me the right department name. If I want to clear out my boxes, I have dot clear clears out my boxes. And me close with the parenthesis will close and also closes. So either of those work. Okay. Now if you remember back to Visual Basic, to JavaScript. Actually, I think I'll just go in through Firefox. Okay, so if I go back to my website, and I go in under Programs and JavaScript, and I come up with Department Array. Okay, so there's Department Array. And it says, please enter the department number, and we'll say I entered a 2. Oh, good. Let me go back to wherever I was. When I entered a 2, it comes back and tells me CI. So here's where I set up the department for JavaScript. Okay, and here's where I set it up for Visual Basic. So these are the kind of similarities and everything. Here, when I set up the array, I called it department array. I could have called it department name. And I write new array that goes up to 4. Over there, I just put the number in parentheses. So different languages ask me different ways of doing it. Then I come down and I set up the values. Here I actually use the 0 value. In the other one that I didn't. And notice that my index is in square brackets here, and it's in parentheses over there. Okay, so they do things like that to you, so that you have to say, which language am I in? Am I using square brackets or parentheses, or what am I using to do this? But the structure is very much the same. So I'm saying, okay, take and make these equal to those department names, okay? Then when I came down, I said, okay, prompt, enter the department number. Over on that one, I put it on a box on the form. I could have put it in a box on a form in JavaScript as well. Or over on the Visual Basic, I could have had an input box where I asked the user to enter it, but I left it on the form there. So then I said if department number is less than 5, because I'd taken care of the 0 up here, the problem with this is I really didn't try to catch negative numbers, but who's going to put in a negative number for a department? They ought to be shot anyway.
Why are you fired anyway.
Huh? No.
I said, why are you looking?
So anyway, what I'm doing is, this would have probably been better saying if department number equals 0 or department number and department number is less than 6, or greater than 0 rather, and department number is less than 6. Then I put in the document right, the department is, and I put it out. And notice it has the same thing. Department number is the thing I took in with the prompt. That's my index. Notice again the square brackets. Over here, department number was the thing that I got from the fall, and that's being used as the index. They both have the ELS that says invalid department number, and that kind of rates it up. What I want you to do is take a few minutes and turn this into that. Make it make the visual basic that matches with the JavaScript, just so you notice the differences. So take and make another visual basic that does the same thing that this JavaScript did. Okay, and it's fairly minor changes, and that's why when you came in I had made the changes. So they're fairly minor changes. And infants, I didn't spell right. So we just took them and brought them over. So I could have changed the name from department name, made it department array, but basically I was too lazy. So I put a 4 in there because it goes up to 4. Okay? And then I had to add the department 0 and the 1, 2, 3, 4 have different values now. I could have changed that if it's less than five, and that, but I decided that in fact I like greater than zero and less than six, so I didn't. But you could have changed this to say if the value is less than five and not hit the compound gap.
Is there a document, something that you can use that says six is worth 50 cents?
Say that again?
Yes.
Not where at though. Yeah.
So if I'm here, I open it up, how do I see the code?
It's in the form. You have to bring up the form. So wait a minute, let me take a picture. And then I will.
Okay. Is that what the number 10 was on?
So this is, there it is, and here is, over here, the form. And if I click on the form, it brings up either the design view or the code view. Okay, so I need to click on the form, and it brings up either the design view or the code view. And the form is in Solution Explorer. Did you find it?
Your program is running, needs to hit stop.
Okay, yes. If the program is running, you have to turn it off.
Here, there is a play and stop.
You can't be playing.
There is a stop button.
Say that again.
You need to see this green thing, not the brown box.
Yeah, right now you have a stop there.
Oh, okay.
Yep.
So you're in run mode, and it doesn't want you modifying things in run mode.
All right.
And it doesn't show you the form in run mode.
The brown box, all right, stop people.
There you go.
Right. So if I hit start now, and it would be lovely if the sun was not shining quite so brightly, and I could see the screen. If I hit start, the brown thing comes up, and at this point the form goes away. Okay, because it's in run mode. It's not in design mode, it's in run mode. And then if I click the X to make this stop, or click the brown button up there, then it goes out of run mode and goes into design mode, which is the green diamond, a green triangle.
So I have the design. But I still don't know how to get to the code part.
Click on any button.
Any button.
Double click on it.
Any button in that window?
Yeah, in the form. Click on any button in the form.
Okay.
Okay, and that brings up the code.
Alrighty.
Okay. Okay. So now that you got it, I'm going to close it.
Yeah.
Sorry about that.
It's
okay. So we're now going to say file, close solution, and I'm closing it. Now it says open a project or solution, and so I'm going to come over here, and I'm going to look for the one that says project write. So I'm going to open Project Write. Okay. So, in computing, the main reason we want programs is to store data. You want to store data someplace so that you can use it. Okay? So I'm going to store my data in a file. Now, in fact, in most VB, we probably store it in a database and in a table on a database. But that's far more complex than when we do this for 2 or 3 weeks. So we're going to just store it in a file. So the name of my file, I can make up a name. I have student fall 19. I'm going to make that because that's the name I used in the other class. So I'm going to make that 2019, okay? So what I'm doing up here, when I want to write a file, is the first thing I have to do right here is tell it where I want to write it. Okay, and I want to write it on the F drive, and I want it to have the name studentfall2019.txt. Okay, that's the name I want it to have. So now I have to look at what I want to put out. Well, if I look at my form and come over here and click on my form, I can see I have three boxes that I want to fill in. Okay, so those are my boxes that I want to fill in. And then I have the button called write and the button called end. Okay, so now I'm going to go back to look at the code itself. And since I have three things on the form that I want to bring in, they're text ID number, text name, text major. So if you look on the form, those are the names that I gave them. So I'm now defining a line that I want to write. I want to write out those three things in a line. So I'm defining the line. And I'm saying the line is going to be string. And it's going to have the content of text ID number dot text concatenated with a comma. So the comma is the field separator or the delimiter. Okay, so the comma separates fields. It's a delimiter. And then I say concatenated with the name. And then I say concatenated with another comma. And then concatenated with the major that came in off the form. And then concatenated with VBCRLF, which means control line B, which means basically go down to the next line. Control line feed means it's like hitting enter, it goes down to the next line. So I want each record to be on a separate line. So the record that I write out, I want to have the ID number, then a comma. The name, then a comma. The major, and then I want it to move down to the next line. And I want to take and put this in computer file system, write all text. If you ask me to do this, I never could do it without looking. I don't memorize those kinds of things. Okay, I look them up. I don't try to even memorize that kind of a line. If I did it every day, all day, then probably I'd have it memorized, but it's not worth it. So my computer file system write all text, and I put in the fact that I want to write it to the F drive, and I want to call what I write studentfall2019.txt. And what I'm going to write is going to look like data write. Data write up here has the thing coming in, and so it's going to look like data write. After I write it, I'm going to clear out the ID, clear out the name, clear out the major, and put the focus, which is the cursor, back into the ID number field. So if I come in here and run this, and I say start, and I run this and I say 123 ID 111 name Susan Ash major CI. So I've entered the data and then I click on write. And when I click on write, it writes it out and clears the screen because I told it to clear and puts the cursor back up in the text box. And then I write the next one, 2222, David Smith. And David is a CI major as well. Whoops. And I want that to be capitals. And then I write it. And then 3333 is Linda French, and her major is CI, and I write it, and 444 is John Doe, BU major,
and I write that. So then when I'm done, I hit the end, and it simply ends it. Okay? Now if I go out to my F drive, and I'm in my F drive, and I want to be in just the F drive, and I'm looking for student fall 2019. So there it is. There's student fall 2019. And when I click on that, it comes up with the data. So there's the file that I created. Each line is on its own record, or each record rather is on its own line, and that's the data. So that data can now be kept for as long as I want to keep it. You know, I've created it and I can go back and get it and access it and do things with it. Okay, on this one I just took in data and wrote it, but obviously I could have done some processing too. Okay, I could have had in here some code that did some kind of processing if I wanted to do it. But I just wanted to show you the read and the write. So this writes a file. Okay? So now we're going to get out of here. And I'm going to file, close solution. And I'm going to open the read version of this. Okay, so we're going to go to VB, and we're going to find the read version. And again, remember that when you send me this stuff, you want to zip it up and send me the entire folder. Okay? And we'll look at that in a minute. So I've now got the read, and I say the SLN is what I want to open, and there is the SLN. And click on any button. It is going to read and show the file that I created. So I'm doing a read, and this is the file that I created. Okay, the first thing I did is I set up dim my reader as, and again, if you ever asked me to write that line, I couldn't do it, but I know where to find it. So I'm now going to say I want to read F student fall, and then I want to change that to 2019 because that's the one that I just created. So I'm saying read from the F drive the file known as student fall 2019. Now, before we do anything, if you look down here, you can see where it does a set delimiter, and I set the delimiter as a comma. So that tells it that when I read this file, a comma is going to be separating fields. If I wanted to, I could have used a slash when I wrote it instead of a comma. And then when I came here, I'd have to put in the fact that when I read this, the slash is going to be the separator. Okay, so that tells what the field separator is. So now I come in and on click, when I click the read button, I am dimming current row as string. So current row is the data that I want to read in. And I said here, if not my reader, end of data. So if I run out of data, then I will take the else and write out end of file reached. But if I haven't run out of data, then I go over and say, okay, current row equals my reader, which is what I dimmed up here, read fields. So I want to do the read fields of my reader. Okay. Then I'm saying the first current row is the name of the row that I want to create. The first thing is going to be the zero.
So it's going to look for everything before the first comma, up to the first comma. This is the first field. And it is putting that in text ID. Then it goes after the comma up to the next comma, and it puts that in text name. And then it takes the rest. There's no more commas, but there's an end of line delimiter. And so it will put the third field into the major. Okay? And it will keep doing that. Every time I click, it will move on to the next row, which becomes the current row. Okay?
So if I run this, okay, and I put in, just click on read, it brings up the first record. Then if I hit read again, it brings up the second record, third record, fourth record. And if I hit it again, it brings up that end of file reached to tell me that I've reached the end of file. Okay. So that's how I can read a file. And again, remember that when you open, when you want to send these to me, let me just run through that quickly. If I have one that I want to send, let's say I want to send basic math. If I right-click on that, it says 7-zip and then shows me what I can do with it. And I want to click on add to basicmath.zip. So I click on that and it will create a zipped file for me. So I now have the zipped file. So it just creates the zip file for me, and then I attach my zip files to the thing. So I gave you five problems. Notice that all of the problems were already done in JavaScript. So you don't have to worry about the logic or anything. I want you to just see the similarities between the two languages and the differences. So you have to just go in and redo those problems in Visual Basic. Okay, you've already done them in JavaScript. You're redoing them in Visual Basic. Okay, so what I want you to do now is the read and the write. And we've got about 20 minutes. So I want you to go in and write a program that will write a file and then write a program that will read the file. And basically you're doing what I did. But try it yourself. That is a very oversimplified old way of doing it. The ways of doing it now are far more sophisticated, shall I say, but far more tedious as well. So this is just a quick and easy way to make a file. Okay. So go in and choose a write, and then go in and choose a write another program to do a read. One program to do a write, one program to do a read. You've already got those three covered. That's
so you just overwrite it?
Yeah, you could do that. I mean, because you can always download it and get another version of the original.
Okay.
So I just go ahead and do it because, as I said, the original is available easily enough.
All right, thanks.
So basically, take my write, redesign it. Maybe you can take in an employee information. Maybe you can take in information about games that you like to play. I don't care. Just make it do a little something different and make a file of something else.